start our morning class time. Glad to see everybody with us this morning. Got a lot of visitors with us, many that we know well, and some we don't. So we're glad to see everyone here. The encouragement it gives us to have all of us come together to study God's Word together and hopefully glean something from it, as we should, for us in our lives today. Jimmy is handing out questions for next week. I've done so pretty good so far. I've kept us a week ahead in questions. It's pretty good for me if you don't know that, but hopefully they've been beneficial for you in studying for this class. As this week we will continue in our study of the book of Joshua, and we will sort of wrap up a little bit from last week in chapter 2 and try to cover several chapters today in the crossing of the Jordan River of the children of Israel. All right, so Jimmy, get those passed out. All right, we're going to have a word of prayer before we really get started this morning. Got a couple people still making their way in. And I'm going to ask Ken Sullivan to lead us as we pray together. So let's bow together. All right, so last week we sort of rushed through the last part of chapter 2 of Joshua when we had the two spies that had been sent in to spy out the land, especially Jericho. And who had come to their aid in Jericho? Rahab the harlot. And we find that when the king gets word that these men have come into the city and that they had been to her house, which was on the city wall, and he sends men to find out about them, to find them. That's what he did. How does Rahab react? What does she answer to these men? Okay. Was she truthful in what she did when she told them? No, she wasn't. So as we ended last week, I sort of threw it out there to you for maybe just a short discussion this morning of the fact that Rahab and how she aided these men, she lied. So in the eyes of the world, they might say that's just okay. Was it okay that she lied? No. What can we say about that? What can we surmise about her in her situation and who she was? Okay. She's a sinful person.
This is just in her nature. God uses the people of this world and even the bad people to teach us lessons and also to make his will is done through people like that.
Okay. That's right. Did her intentions make it okay for her to lie? How would the world today look? How does the world today look at that?
That,
yeah, acceptable, I had written down in my notes situation ethics. And, you know, we face that every day in our lives, don't we, Rick?
She's a great example of God saved by faith.
Right.
She acted in faith, though what she did was wrong. She wasn't doing like the Israelites were, but she acted in faith, and that's what the Scriptures say.
Hebrews 11, by faith, she, by believing in God, she helped save these spies. It doesn't say in Hebrews that she was okay in lying. But as Rick said, she really didn't know who God was other than what she had heard, and she believed. But we know she believed, right? She had faith. She knew ultimately to save herself and her family. She understood the power of this God, as we said last week, you know, Yahweh. And so that doesn't excuse her from sinning. As she later is saved, and we'll talk about in the next lesson next week, what ultimately do we find out about Rahab? What very important fact do we find out about Rahab? She is in the lineage to Christ. So here is this woman who was not a Jew, was not an Israelite, but yet, look at where she is placed. She is part of the lineage of Christ. And I think we can surmise pretty easily that as she lived among the Israelites when she was saved, she came to know God as they knew God and had faith in Him. And so, important to understand that, you know, doesn't excuse lying. As we said, God allows, uses other people, even kings, to fulfill his will. It doesn't make it okay that they're evil, but he does use them. Did the law of Moses address lying? Does God's law today address lying? Ephesians 4:25 says, put away lying. We have to put that out of our lives. It's wrong. We don't need to do that. We can look at many other passages, but, and we look at in Proverbs where it talks about those seven things that God hates. Second thing is a lying tongue. And so, again, the idea that understanding that Rahab was being used by God, and then we feel confident she came to understand who he was and what he expected in his law and became obedient to that. But we see this great faith in her, and we'll see it demonstrated for her, in a sense, as we talk about the city of Jericho falling and her family being saved. All right, well, let's move on to 3. And start our discussion this morning about crossing of the Jordan River. And so we see in chapter 2 and verse 24, we find that these spies return. And it says, and they said to Joshua in verse 24, truly the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. And you know, I think back to those 12 spies were sent out about 40 years before, and how 10 of them came back and said, oh, everything's great there, but we can't defeat these people. They're too great. Had anything changed about those people? Not really. But these men who were sent in saw the attitude of the people, and that's what had changed. And they came back and reported to Joshua, we can go in and take this. And he reports back to them. They report back to him all the things they had seen there. And so we see in chapter 3 that, again, Joshua rises up early. He gathers the people, and they head away from Shittim, or some versions say the Acacia Grove, and they go to the Jordan River. And this is the sort of a map that I had up last week, that, and we'll go to another one a little bit, but sort of give us an idea of where they traveled to the Jordan. And we find out in a few minutes that they crossed the Jordan over against Jericho. And so they're somewhat in line to the east of Jericho where they cross. And so they come there and they lodge 3 days there. And we remember back in chapter 1 and verse 11, what did Joshua command these captains of the people to do? Do you remember that? That's right. He says, go tell the people to prepare to cross. He says, because what? Remember the time frame he says, tells, or they tell them? In 3 days. So what does that tell us about chapter 1, verse 11? Again, that's already gotten ahead to this point. And so again, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, there's times even in this book where things are not in chronological order as we read them, but they're in importance, I think, and help us to understand. So you know, they had gotten to this Jordan River, and they're told by these captains of the people to get prepared to cross the Jordan. So they're ready to cross over. So what is about to occur? Somebody tell me what's about to occur here in 3 days. Okay, so these captains of the people have told them, get ready because you're going to cross the Jordan. Now, put yourself in their shoes. If you're there at this Jordan River, and again, what's going on with the Jordan River right now? Flood stage. Time of harvest. You know, could be as wide as, I wrote it down here somewhere, could be as wide as a half a mile of water during the flood stage, possibly. Because, you know, the Jordan River is down in a little valley. Normally it's, you know, 100 feet wide-ish in some places. Probably in some pictures I've seen, some places not quite that wide. But it could have been up to that much in width. So here's all these hundreds of thousands of people, and they're being told, you're about to cross the Jordan. How would you feel? What would your reaction be? Would you have any doubt? What kind of questions would you be asking? Yeah, well, how's this going to happen? We're going to all swim across? No, there wouldn't be bridges then. So what a bridge to go across? What is God using this for? What is one of the purposes of God preparing them to cross the Jordan, and then as they cross the Jordan, what's he doing? He's building their faith in God, who is going to deliver all these people out of the land of Canaan that were very mighty. And so here they are. You know, some of them had to be sitting there going, how are we going to do this? Again, as was said, anxious. I think I could feel that way. You know? I mean, we're looking at somewhat of an impossible task in our mind, right? Do we ever face things like that? Do we ever face things that we think are just impossible? What should we do about those? Pray. Put them in God's hands. Have faith in God. And so as they're going to cross the Jordan, they're going to see God's power, and God is going to help them remember that for years to come. And as they push through the land into Jericho, in this first city that is heavily fortified, they're going to see the power of God again in just a number of days after they see this great power that's going to happen now. So the officers gave directions on how they're to proceed, what they're to do when they see the Ark of the Covenant and those carrying them going forward. They're to be prepared to move forward. How far were they told to stay back from the Ark initially? 2,000 cubits, about 3,000 feet. Why were they told to do that? So what does that mean? What if, as the ark got up, they just all crowded behind the ark? What could have happened? They wouldn't know where they're going. They wouldn't know which way to go. They might sort of guide themselves in a direction that maybe God wasn't guiding them. I mean, just think about that, this mass crowd of people. But the instructions were to stay back from there. Now, yeah, most of them did not, yeah. Only those who were under 20. And so that had been 40 years. Right. Okay, so, and we haven't gone very far in chapter 3, have we? Look in verse 5. We have sort of, I sort of call it interlude. What does Joshua tell the people to do? Consecrate themselves. Why? Why would they need to, what does that mean, consecrate? Set apart, sanctify. Why? Yeah, they're following the Ark of the Covenant where, you know, be the presence of God. God is leading them. When have they been told to do this before? You remember a time? In Exodus? I believe it's chapter 19. God tells Moses, prepare the people as I come down to speak to them. Moses was told to tell them to consecrate themselves. Highly important event that's about to happen. God is going to come down and show his power and his might among them. And he tells them to be prepared for that event. And then we find that in verse 7, we find the Lord speaking to Joshua. What important thing does God do for Joshua here to give him the encouragement that he needed? He said, today, I'm going to set you up in this high position in the eyes of the people, just as Moses was set up. So here, Joshua may have had a little bit of angst about him leading this large group of people across the Jordan River. Joshua know what God was going to do? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think Joshua knew exactly how God was going to make this happen. He might have. But yet he's about to lead these people and he's giving him encouragement at this time. Yes. Sure. That's right. That's right. I mean, to this point, other than what they'd seen as Joshua was the, you know, the guy under Moses through all these years of wandering in the wilderness, what had they seen Joshua had led them? No, nothing. And so, yeah, there's there for them as well. So we find Joshua giving instructions to the priest about taking the ark, coming to the edge of the water as they step their feet in. And I have a question here. What did Joshua state to the people in giving them instructions about their crossing the Jordan? What are they going to learn from this? What does Joshua tell them? This is what you're going to learn out of this. Right. God is going to be there for you. Not only is he going to be there for you, he's going to guide you. He's going to provide for you, and he's going to be the one who drives out the people, the Canaanites from the land. He names all those people that are going to be driven out. And this is an event that will, again, bolster their faith in God as they start to make that push across Canaan. As they go to Jericho, Ai, and these other cities are going to take. So they're given instructions. The ark will cross the Jordan, into the Jordan. And we briefly find here, sort of out of place in a sense, where Joshua tells the Israelites to take 12 men, one of each tribe. And we're going to find out what the importance of that is later in this chapter. And so when the soles of the feet of the priest hit the water, what happens? It says the water builds up in a heap. Right? And the waters are, it says the waters are cut off upstream and stood like a heap. And we'll find that they stood back to, I sort of got this map here, give you a sort of an idea. You see that sort of the middle up top, Adam? That's the town at which it said they were built up as a heap there. And it says it cut off going to the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea. So there's no water in this area. And there's no water to the extent that what occurs? What's the condition of the riverbed? As they crossed on dry land. And I've read a lot of things where it says, you know, the bottom of the Jordan is full of stones and things that they could have been walking on that might have been considered that. But it says here they walked across on dry land. The power of God to not only hold the waters back, but the land they walk on to be dry as they walk across. And it says they crossed over to the opposite side. We've already talked about the condition of the Jordan. It was overflowing its banks. So here's a question. Could this have happened naturally? I sort of have behind that, did it? There are recorded events in the history of time where there have been mudslides and things that may have stopped the Jordan up for a short period of time. But God says here he pushed the waters up in a heap. How he did that, we don't know. But I know this, God did it. I have no doubt in that because that's what his word says. So when man tries to tell us, well, this happened or that happened, you know, you can believe what you want to believe. But God's word says that he stopped the water and they walked across on dry ground. To me, that's only the hand of God doing his job, doing his work. So they have crossed over the Jordan. Any comments, thoughts before we move forward? Exactly. That's right. And as we get through this next section, that's a really important point is that not only did the Israelites see it, but the people knew it. And think back to the two spies in Jericho. What did they come back to report? Not only that the people had been led through, you know, by God and they defeated all these kings over on the east side of the Jordan, but they went all the way back to what? What event did they go back to that they knew about? Crossing the Red Sea. So they knew. And, of course, you know, when you look at this, it's only about, I don't know, 5-6 miles from the Jordan River to Jericho. You know, it's not that far away. And for this crowd of people to cross the river as they did and as quickly as they did, because what does it say in chapter 4 about how quickly they crossed? There's a point it says they hurried across. And I get the mind of the people going, I see that water heaped up. I don't want to be stuck in here when it opens back up and starts flowing. Or I don't want to be like the Egyptians who were caught in the Red Sea that my parents told me about, or maybe I saw because I was about 15 or whatever. And so, yes, the great power of the word passing through and people believing it, knowing what happened there. So chapter 4. So we have occasions here of what I call the remembrance of the crossing of the Jordan. I think it's very important to understand God is doing this for a reason. And so we find that when they had completely crossed the Jordan, what did Joshua send these 12 men to do? Remember the 12 men that were chosen before they crossed, one of each tribe? What did he send those 12 men to do? Well, back up. What did they go get out of the Jordan? They pick up each a stone, a large stone, and they're to go in, and the ark is still in the riverbed. And they go in and each pick up a stone to carry it across. And the sense I get, I may be wrong, is the people that crossed over, these 12 men now go back in and take up these 12 stones and carry them out with them. And then what does Joshua do? Joshua does something too, right? Joshua goes in and he takes 12 stones and piles them up there where the Ark of the Covenant was held. And it says, there to them to this day, whoever was being written to initially, those 12 stones are there to this day. Why was it important, do you think? Do you think there's an importance for Joshua to have gone and done that? Can you think of any reason why? Would anybody ever see these stones again? Yeah, that's right. I really don't think anybody would ever see these stones again. But you know what? Joshua would remember that, wouldn't he? He could say, I went down and I placed these 12 stones here as a memorial. They're there. I can testify to that because I did it. And I can testify to the fact that this Jordan River was cut off and the ground was dry. And I set this up as a memorial. And I can testify to that. To me, and maybe that's off some, but that's what I think about, is Joshua himself could bear witness that he did this. Thoughts, comments? Yes.
So there's so many points in the Old Testament where people do something and they're lifted up instead of God, and then they have to go back and say, God is the one that did this. So I almost wonder if he did it. Say to the people, it's a memorial for what God has done, not for what
I think that's true. I think you're exactly right. Because the point would not be, I set this up. It would be, this was set up as a reminder of what God did for the people of Israel. How God help them across the river and into the promised land. The power of God being revealed. All right, let me catch up to my stuff here. So I don't get, yes. Yes, yes. All right, so again, we talked about, yes. Good point. Good point. And you actually stole my next point, sort of, but that's okay. You did it very well, talking about the memorials that we have. You know, we have these 12 stones that these men take, and they eventually come to camp at Gilgal, right? And we see Gilgal, which is just to the east of Jericho. And they take these 12 stones, and among other things that happened at Gilgal, they set these stones up as a memorial. And not just a memorial for this group of people who have crossed over, but for who else? Their children, those who will ask, you know, what is this? And of course, my question, and Jordan answered most of it pretty succinctly there. Do we have memorials today? Well, sure we do. Sure we do. We'll be involved in one this morning that we do every Sunday. One of the most important things we do is that's remembering Christ and what he did for us. Are there other memorials that we're involved in? I think we could probably say so. So it's very important to understand the importance of memorials to us, to help us not forget the power of God, what God has done for us, how we should live just as the examples that were given to us. Scott? I would state that it's important to us, and I think you're saying this, that we keep these stories, I use stories in the sense of these events, before our children. Don't just depend on them to go read this, to go to a Bible class, this. We talk to them about those things to remind them, just as the Israelites were told to do. They were told, you know, to keep telling their children. They're to tell them day and night. Keep reminding them. And that's the importance of that, and that's right. That we should do. Yes, sir. Yes, yes. I think many times in our lives we can point back to events and maybe we prayed about something and maybe we have to step back and go, well, it didn't actually happen the way I asked God, but when I look back I see God's hand in something in helping us. Jimmy? Good points. Things for us to think about. Things for us to work on. Things for us to build our faith in. So, as the next bell's about to ring, we didn't quite get through chapter 5, verse 12. We'll pick up next week, probably in about verse 2. But we've already talked about verse 1 of chapter 5. So it was, and all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. So we see the reaction of those people who did not really believe in Yahweh God, but they saw what he did and they believed that he did it, and it affected them in the way that it should, in the way that God, I think, intended for it to. All right, so next week we'll pick up there. As Jimmy passed out questions for next week, we'll begin talking about the defeat of Jericho. Thanks, Scott, for your comments, and we'll break for a few minutes.